I'm very pleased to tell you a little bit about the work that I'm involved in Hong Kong and let you know a bit about things there. And I would appreciate your comments and suggestions and advice as to how we could do things better. Now, they asked for this to be taped. I really can't imagine that anyone would want a copy of it, but we'll keep it running for a little while. Just to introduce myself to the tape, I'm Russell Clark. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm with the Church Missionary Society and been placed in Hong Kong since 1974. It was my hope, I thought God was leading me actually to work in Indonesia, but God overruled in wonderful ways and I found myself in Hong Kong in a hospital that's called the United Christian Hospital. And this is a hospital that has come from an ecumenical grouping of the major Christian denominations in Hong Kong. It's called the Hong Kong Christian Council. And in the 1960s, they felt that there was an opportunity and a need, really, for the churches to be involved in a major medical task, not just small clinic work. And so this Protestant body chose a subcommittee to look into this area, and in cooperation with the government, plans were laid for the building of a major hospital. The area chosen is called Guntong, spelt K-W-U-N-T-O-N-G, but pronounced really as if it's G-U-N, Guntong, which is on the eastern side of Kowloon. Now, I realise most of you have been to Hong Kong, so it's when you come into the airport, you turn right instead of turning left. Most people turn left, which takes you into the bright lights of Nathan Road, Jim Sa Joy, and then across to Hong Kong Island. Well, you don't go that way, you turn right, and you go to Guntong. And 25 years ago, there was nothing there, but the area was allocated to be an industrial area and a housing area, government housing area. And Guntong is now in the Guinness Book of Records as the most industrialised and congested factory area in the world. And we have something like 3,000 factories all in a square mile on the harbour front. The factories produce textiles and plastic implements, flowers and parts for electronics, equipment and so on. So the workers that were there, the capitalists building the factories, and the people then rehoused in major government housing estates, and we have some 6 very large housing estates with a population of 700,000 people, all in 4 square miles. So the city of Perth has just suddenly been placed on this eastern end of Kowloon and housed in very high-rise buildings. Well, that all started some 20 years ago, but the government had no plans at all of building a hospital for that area, and so the people were left to do the best they could to get into the major government hospital, which is in the central part of Kowloon. We're about 7 miles from this hospital. But with only one road in and out of Guntong, with that number of people, the traffic's very congested, it's very difficult to get in and out. Hong Kong also has many records. Another one is that we have one registered vehicle for every 18 feet of road. So we have major traffic congestion, and it's very difficult often to get in or out, and you feel quite isolated in this sort of area. Well, the churches saw there was a real contribution they could make to providing a hospital for the Guntong area, and they planned for it and they raised funds for it. Most of the money came from overseas Christians, World Council of Churches, German funding, and they needed about 40 million Hong Kong dollars to build it, and the churches went close to getting something like 30 million with a modest contribution from Hong Kong itself. the rest of the money came from the government, because the church has said to the government, well, we can build a 300 bed hospital, that's it. The government said, no, go ahead with your plans for a larger hospital and we'll put the rest in. And so that's how it's come about. The government gave the land and put in the extra money to build it. And from the beginning, we had an arrangement with the government that they would pay 90% of all the running costs. And we worked out an authority structure whereby the major, most important committees, called the medical committee, which has half from the hospital and half from the government, and this is where decisions are made about budgeting and expansion plans and so on. So that's the hospital was then opened in December 1973. It looks something like that. I've got lots of slides, but obviously I haven't brought them today to show you. So I can find some pictures for you. Built as a 570 bed hospital, it's now 640 beds, as we've had to just cram things in a little bit more because of the demand that's laid upon it. So we're Christian in enterprise and in initiative, that has grown from the churches. The government are quite happy to allow the hospital to be independent in the way it does things. I'd like to hand that around. And our authority structure is a hospital board, of which 50% are nominated by the Hong Kong Christian Council. So in fact, at that level, the structure is such that the churches, and we have that means Christians, the churches are able to influence the style of the hospital quite considerably. That's all built into the system, and the government will not interfere with any particular Christian style of work that we might like to do. It's quite a good deal for the government, because Hong Kong's in a special position, I suppose, much as it was in Britain and Australia years ago, where the government encourages non-government bodies to do a lot of the social welfare work, medical and educational work. And I think that will be the constant long-term pattern for Hong Kong. The government's rather reluctant to want to do things itself, but will pay the running costs for the non-government agencies. Now, that's good for government because they are able to not have to worry about all the administrative side of things and have their own departments to control things. But also they control our budget and our spending much more effectively than if we're a government institution. They're having to spend a lot more money in government hospitals than they spend in our hospital, which is one of my biggest problems. They're happy to have a two-tier system, government hospitals, subvented hospitals, and not give the subvented hospitals as much, so that it's more attractive financially to work in the government hospital than it is to work in a subvented hospital, and the government are reluctant to change that because they know that we try a little bit harder and we practice on the whole a better standard of medicine, and they know that if they gave us the same amount of money we just would be seen to be a better hospital, and that's unfortunately the case. But we're a bit restricted. However, we have to, I think, be philosophical and realise that on the whole we're on a pretty good deal. Our running budget in Hong Kong dollars is something like $25 million a year, and that's a lot of money the government is paying to allow a Christian hospital to function. So although we're a Christian enterprise initiative, initially Christian funding, and we have the ability to practice as a Christian hospital, our problem is, however, that we don't have enough Christians to work in the hospital, and we have no strict personnel policy at any level, except perhaps the superintendent level, to say that we should have a Christian person working there. And that, sadly, is our weakness. One of the intrinsic weaknesses, I think, in this Christian hospital we have is it's ecumenical. And so it's difficult to get onto sensitive issues about evangelism and a particular theological line. And so we have a common denominator which is more humanism than Christianity. And then our superintendent who in fact is responsible for most of the drive in building the hospital, is quite opposed to the thought of a hospital being a place where there might be any specific Christian outreach or evangelism, and that we're simply doing our Christian job by providing a good medical service. And in many ways that is hindering our clearer task of perhaps recruiting Christians. He's not very interested in recruiting Christians. The hospital opened in December 73. It opened in stages, initially opening 100 beds and then increasing from that, and providing the services that we had staff for. Initially we had obstetric and gynecological staff and surgical staff, but they couldn't find anyone to be a physician to work in the hospital and to be in charge of the medical department. And that is how I came to be involved, and I arrived there in October 74 to be a physician in the hospital. We heard yesterday in that missionary session something about lack of job descriptions, and no one tells you what you're expected to do when you arrive there. It was classic in my case. I arrived there knowing that I was working in a Christian hospital, but that's about all I knew. And I discovered that I actually was in charge of the medical department. The way I discovered that is that a circular came around with a list of names, and for each department they had an asterisk beside the names, and I looked at the asterisk and it said head of the department. I discovered I was not just working as a physician there, I was in fact having to run the medical department. Now that's been a great thrill and a great challenge for me. We have 120 general medical beds, 10 bed ICU unit, and my first shock was to discover after recovering from the shock that I was in charge, was to then discover that there was no security of staffing. We had no interns at that stage because we were not established. We had 4 medical officers who were in their second year after graduation working and running the medical department and asking the surgeons for help and difficult medical problems. But after I arrived, 1 month later, someone said, "Well, I'm leaving now." I said, "What do you mean you're leaving?" "Well, I'm going to Australia," or "I'm going to America," or, "Oh, I see, and who's coming after you?" "Oh, I don't know, I'm just leaving." And we had the patients and the beds and the nurses, but not the doctors. And there was no security of doctors coming because it wasn't a popular hospital, it was a new hospital. People didn't see why they should want to work there. So my first task was to try to establish some sort of security in staffing, that we would attract medical officers. And I followed the tested path of teaching and training, and so I put quite a lot of effort into establishing a teaching and training program for medical officers and helping them to be able to get to the point where they could go to England for their MRCPs. We now have a structure of 10 medical officers that covers the range of senior residents and registrars working in the medical department. And I have 3 other senior people to help me running the department. So we've divided that into 3 teams. We've had interns since 1975 sent to us by the university, which has been helpful. So we have 3 interns who are sent to us for 6-month periods. In addition, about 4 years ago, we started a new order of doctors called externs. Now, externs are doctors who trained in China, some before the communist takeover and some during it, but they had all left China. And we have something like 1,800 doctors who trained in China who've been resident in Hong Kong for some time, and they were not allowed to practice medicine in Hong Kong. And they were doing miscellaneous things, some were acupuncturists, some ran illegal clinics and so on. Some political pressure was applied to the government some years ago, and they established a system whereby they could be take examinations, and if they passed them, they did an 18-month attachment to hospitals where they worked a 9-to-5 daytime work but didn't do any after-hours work, so they called an extern. And we've, for the last 4 years, had externs working with us too, which has been helpful. So we now have a medical department structure of some six intern externs, 10 medical officers, and three of us in senior positions, with 120 beds to work in. And we're able to provide a fairly full range of medical services, covering the full range of the subspecialties. And we have a lot of very interesting medicine, which I enjoy very much and I've benefited from greatly. I've had to cope with learning by experience about the full range of medical problems that would I'd be confronted with. And I think now that we're able to provide a fairly competent medical service in that area. That has been my major task as head of the medical department, to try to provide a full range of medical services to attract staff and to be able to care for patients. I keep trying to teach my medical officers that the three areas that I think we have special contributions to make as physicians are firstly in the competence of our medical care, secondly in our education of patients to understand about their disease and what's required of them and their family and for long-term management. But thirdly, in the area of providing a support for them to cope with them in their suffering and sickness. These last two are very difficult concepts for most of my medical officers to appreciate. I think we from a Christian culture see this much more readily than they do. When I first arrived, the way they practice medicine was an eye-opener to me. And unfortunately, it's the way they practice medicine in the big government hospitals, and they were just carrying on with the way they did it. But I'd come on around and there would be virtually no communication between doctor and patient. Suddenly three or four doctors would all go around as a group. It's packed medicine. Go around as a group, and then suddenly three or four doctors all palpating the abdomen all at once, and then they all get in a little huddle and then they move off to the next patient, and absolutely no communication between patient and doctor. We see it in outpatients. Everyone gets used to being in a hurry in outpatients. And patients have adapted to it. So I would sit down and the nurse would call in the next patient or outpatients. The patient would come in immediately, pull up the shirt firstly. No word, no greeting. Just sit down and pull up the shirt, ready for me to put the magic stethoscope on. And then they're sort of sitting on, perched on the edge of the seat, ready to go, because they know they only got a minute with the doctor, and so they don't waste time giving the doctor the chance. And this is the first situation I came. This is the sort of practice of just a packed group. I went and visited the professor of medicine in Hong Kong, who's the first Chinese professor of medicine, despite his name David Todd, despite his voice, which is a very cultured Oxford English accent. He is indeed, that's right. He's a new counsellor. I visited him soon after I arrived, and he said, "Oh, things are much better now that you're there." I said, "Oh, small world, everyone knows about everything in Hong Kong." He said, "Oh yes, before you came, the medical officers all finished their work at lunchtime." He says, "Now they understand they have to work all day." So, you know, much of my early work, the first few years, has been in this area of trying to show more caring attitude to patients, trying to get them to talk to their patients and to educate them and to spend a little bit longer with them. I've had to do incredible things I'd have to give a guideline as to how long they ought to let that patient sit there. At least 5 minutes I used to think was a very short time, but I think it's a very long time by Hong Kong standards. And I said, "What do we do in 5 minutes? You know, this is a follow-up case." I said, "Well, you could just talk, you know." and I've allocated a booking system. This is the number of patients I've booked in to see you. That's 35. That means you've got 5 minutes for each patient. And they sign on. 5 minutes, how do I spend so long? I deliberately rotate them all through psychiatry. We have a psychiatric unit, and we have great trouble staffing that, but I've rotated my medical officers through other departments, which initially they didn't like at all, and in fact everyone's had very negative views towards going through psychiatry, but I insisted that they all had to spend time in psychiatry, because I felt at least I had to talk to the patient in psychiatry, even if it be of an analytical kind, at least they had to actually talk. And that's been helpful. That's helped them to get some idea about the importance of talking and listening. I rotate them all through geriatrics, which I'll tell you a bit in a minute. We started that soon after I arrived too, as a geriatric ward. Our geriatric problems are really mainly social problems. And again, I have a very positive view about rotating them through that, because they have to start coming to terms with the social problems that people have in Hong Kong. Most of our doctors are very elitist, and they come from the rich and privileged families in Hong Kong, and they know nothing about what it's like to live as the poor do in this sort of accommodation, which is just down the road from us, and how people live in squatter accommodation in government housing. Well, when they're the geriatrician, they have to sometimes go to their homes and visit people in their homes like this and think about how an old lady without any family is going to manage by herself in one of these, and think about involving community resources and so on. And that's an effort to try to get them to understand some of the problems. We established a community nursing service, which I'll mention more about a bit later on. And I send one of my doctors once a week to go out with the nurse to visit people in their homes. And all this is an effort to try to break down some of the traditional barriers that seem to be there in a status-conscious society, as Hong Kong is, where the rich and the educated have very little contact with the poor and the stupid. But that's been my area in the medical department. Now, there's three other areas I'd like to say something about, and my four major areas of activity in Hong Kong are firstly the medical department, secondly the emergency department, thirdly a community health program, and fourthly in Christian contribution to the hospital. And perhaps what I could do is that we could just stop after I mention each section, if you'd like to comment and clarify points if I haven't made it very clear, or any comments you might like to make or suggestions, I'd be grateful for them. But basically what I've been talking about is my major task, which is head of the medical department, and some of the ways I've seen things and what we've been trying to do. Is there any comments you'd like to make or questions you'd like to ask on that side?
These doctors you're working with, are they mainly Hong Kong residents?
Yes, all of the junior staff are all Hong Kong graduates. We have one medical school, and it produces about 120 doctors. And interns are all sent, and we get sent our interns, but medical officers all come of their own volition. Yes, very English, actually. And this,
how come they...
Well... The Asian, Hong Kong's a meeting point of East and West, and I think the saddest thing, I got very cross at one stage, I wrote a powerful letter to the postgraduate dean of medical studies, it's very critical of the system. I said something like, I thought that Hong Kong was capable of producing very good doctors, it got very good material to start with, they're bright people who do medicine, because it's very competitive. The basic undergraduate tuition is good, but the moment they seem to leave that undergraduate stage, their postgraduate training and postgraduate standards are not good. They're fairly good in the specifically technical areas, like surgery or obstetrics. They're technically able, but they're not very good at the level of dealing with people, which is partly a Chinese problem. Because the Chinese are not so good at relating anyway. the concept of chatting is very foreign to Chinese. They don't know. You find it even in the language. There's no sort of simple greeting or idle chat in Cantonese. No one talks about the weather. There's sort of no common sort of simple conversation to talk about. The greetings are related to good morning, then have you eaten, and then are you busy? And that's what you talk about. So you get straight to business straight away. And the moment you've finished your business, you've asked your 5 questions, you've got your answers. There's nothing more to say to your patient. And that's partly the Chinese problem. Stop people just chatting and sitting and talking. But another problem would be that the education is entirely, medical education is entirely related to one university and one hospital. And there's no opportunity for exposure to other hospitals or other doctors working elsewhere. But that might be a good thing rather than a bad thing, because in fact the university standards are fairly good, whereas the other hospital, their standards are much poorer, so that may not help them. Private practice, there's no very good standard set for caring for patients. And unfortunately, they tend to count the number of patients you see per day. Once you go into the private sector in Hong Kong, and it's pretty true of most of Asia, the money side takes over completely. They have what's called a 200 club. And that means you're a good doctor, you see 200 patients a day. And that's what you're aiming for. If you're a good doctor, you aim to see more. It makes no interest what sort of cases you deal with or how well you handle them, it's just the numbers. So there's an elite 200 club. They work very hard to see 200 people in a day, but they'll see them quickly. There's no specialty register in Hong Kong. So everyone works at a general level as a practitioner. You just go to any doctor you're choosing off the street. There's no consultation or referral system. So you might be an obstetrician, but you'd be very happy deal with an orthopaedic problem. You wouldn't send it to an orthopaedic person. An orthopaedic person happily deals with gynecology. A paediatrician deals with dogs. So it goes on. Even though we have people, you've probably trained them. You've probably trained doctors from Hong Kong. And while they were with you, either you saw them as competent, even caring doctors. The moment they go back into the Hong Kong society, they lose this high-powered cardiology and they're very happy to treat coughs and colds and antibiotics all the time, and injections, all sorts of drugs for medical practice. There isn't a good tradition in Hong Kong of private care in medicine, so there's no example set for younger doctors at that level. There's not a good example set for them at the university either. They still do grand rounds at the university in medicine. The professor of medicine, and the two professors of medicine, all the readers, and all of the lecturers, and all the medical officers come in and do a round of the medical department every Monday with 40 or 50 doctors and students. The patient, of course, is neglected. They go around in a grand parade around the place. And, there's a lack of good standards to try to break these barriers. Where the only hospital in Hong Kong one of the early things I did was I said, well, I'm going to stop this pack practice to medicine. Where no one writes anything, no one takes any notes, no one makes any decision, just a group decision. And I allocated that you're the one doctor to care for those patients, they're your patients, they're your patients. And if things go wrong, you're the one to take responsibility for it. But no one asked it. Yes, they keep pointing out to me that I'm doing things differently from everyone else. Why?
But they're sufficiently
I think so. Within reason. I've prepared guidelines, most fantastic orders, but I think the interns in Australia would just go on strike if they got handed out the things I hand out. But it's laid a new pattern, and now our style is working around the world.
Did you work terribly hard, Dr. Russell?
I work very intensively in the working hours, yes, but after hours it's very easy. I've got an intern and a medical officer on call, and they're able to do When I first arrived, there was an English physician who also arrived. The hospital was unable to find local Chinese physicians to start the medical department, which says something about Chinese approach to new things. They actually thrive on new things, whereas we might find that a great challenge. They like things to be tested and tried and proven before they get involved. So they couldn't find anyone to start that, which was my opportunity to get there. And there was an English physician my age who arrived too, so we're both young and keen and really functioning at a senior registrar level, I suppose. And that was good, because we actually used to run ourselves through all the cardiac arrests. We started a cardiac arrest team. We're the only hospital in Hong Kong that's got a cardiac arrest team. But we used to run at all hours of the night, and when I was younger and keener, that set a good pattern. But these days, quite a bit older, and the medical officers can do it all day long. So after hours is quite good. It's fairly intense during the day, and I have to learn to make decisions quickly that perhaps... What's that?
Oh,
no, maybe we work in the hospital. We live in the hospital. So I actually come home for lunch. It's 5 or 10 minutes. And when I leave, that's 6:30, I'm home immediately. So it's quite good. Now, many people here probably work much longer hours than I do in all. I work hard. People work hard. It's just, I think, the intensity of work. I have to go through things pretty quickly. But now we've been able to get a standard and a style of work, which the others follow. And I've got, 6 or 7 people got their MRCPs. And so we're getting them coming up, staying on and continuing to work. And I'm becoming superfluous now for the medical department. And I'm quite sure that at the end of this tour and another 3 years, it'll be quite wrong for me to want to stay on as head of the medical department, because there'll be local physicians who would like to be in charge and would be quite capable of being in charge. So I would certainly step down for that.
Have you had to learn any Chinese language?
Yes, and it's very important. This actually is my greatest frustration, and I would value your prayers for this more than anything else. I arrived on Thursday night in Hong Kong. We had one child then. Kay was pregnant with our second. On Friday I was taken to register, and on Saturday I was called into work by the medical officers, who said, we've been expecting you for 10 months. Where have you been? really, since then, and then I found out I was in charge, and staff were leaving, and I had to establish procedures and structures and everything. So really, I've gone straight into medicine, and it's been a major task at a medical level. But I spent a year before in a missionary training college, and so I've got all the right ideas about the importance of language and so on. So we've been doing Cantonese part-time ever since, and we still do. We have a lecture, we have a lesson once a week at night. It was initially 3 nights a week for the first year. And I've made some progress in medical Cantonese, and I'm certainly able to take a history and talk to patients. But I would like to do a lot more, because you can't even tell a person, be nice. You know, I say to my medical officers, look, can't you see the patient's very worried, very agitated? Just, you know, chat to them, find out what the problem is, try to express some empathy. And I'm very frustrated, and the only thing I say is, you got pain? Nope. Oh, yes. Yeah. She says she's got pain. Yeah, go on, say a bit more, you know. Try to find out how the person... And another thing, we in English, we say, how do you feel about something? It has a lot of meaning to it. But they don't have that concept at all. So you either got pain or not have got... What do you feel about having pain? Is it worrying you, upsetting you? You don't understand that question. See? They don't understand... Of course you've got pain, you don't like pain. It's as simple as that. And so if I had fluent Cantonese, I would be able to show in my style much more the sort of medicine that is Christian medicine. But I haven't had the chance to really develop that. Now, what I would ask to pray for is that there might be a physician who might come up for 1, 2, 3 months and relieve me of my work, that I might be able to spend a full time effort in Cantonese. I've made some progress. If I had a short concentrated burst, I could get a lot further. But to learn Cantonese for a foreigner, it's recommended you spend 2 years full time learning Cantonese. Now that's a hard language, and that's a lot of 2 full years, 4 university terms, and you just do one subject the whole time for 2 full years. So you can see that I've got quite a long way to go.
What about
the
language
of the people get up there? No, they might be. I never had much chance of time to get onto them before I went up.
And would a physician going from, say, Australian medicine to Hong Kong be able to cope?
Yes, John Roberts is there at the moment. I'm very grateful that John Roberts from Brisbane is coming home tonight. And he's been there for 4 weeks, and I'll be looking forward. I'll give you a better answer tomorrow when I talk to him, how well he's been able to fit in. But I think he'll have fitted in well, because all of our medical work is in English, and the nurses speak English. It's just dealing with the patients that's in Chinese. And I think that with the structure, he'd fit in quite well. In some ways, I think he'll have found it a bit of a holiday, from what I understand, the way John Roberts works. He does 3 nights a week. That's very late sessions. Well, he won't have to worry about that when he's home at night. He'll be able to rest. And I think, you know, he'll be fairly protected during the daytime too. And then Bob Beatty, a physician from Sydney, is going up in a week's time for another month, and I think he'll fit in well too. So I think, yes, you can certainly fit in. And if I was relieved, I think, for a period of time, I think I might make progress in language, and that would be the area that I think would make the greatest contribution in the way I could show how to do things, rather than just tell people be kind, be nice, just talk to the patient.
How long are you spending at home?
It's 3 months in all. This is, we've been back a month, another 2 months ago.
The children in Kay speak Cantonese?
Yeah, Kay is much brighter than I am, quicker at languages. She knows more than I do. So when we're out, I get Kate at all. Children don't at all, no.
What has to do with your children?
We're very fortunate. Being a colony of England, of Britain, English education is well established. The government established schools for civil servants, and now it's provided for all the non-Chinese, English education is provided for all non-Chinese people. And this, we follow the English pattern, the standards are high, we're very pleased with the school. They go on a school bus from the hospital about 7 miles to English primary school.
Is there much community interest in the hospital?
Not very much, no. We've tried, we've had open days, and I'll tell you more about community health project in a minute, but not as much as we would like, no. So the hospital board is really an appointed business. The Hong Kong Council appoints their representatives, and the hospital superintendent appoints the rest. Rings up people and asks them if they'd like to go on. There's no one else interested in being part of it.
You have already told me something. I've spent some time
Right. Well, in some ways we're called United Christian Hospital. In some ways I wish we weren't, because we have the whole problem of Christian institutions. We see it in Australia, the way our Christian institutions are not very Christian now, and we're really going along the same sort of way, I suppose. We're Christian in name. We're big. We're 640 beds. We've got all the sections. Of the various departments, my department alone has a person that's Christian in charge of it. So our surgeons, obstetricians, paediatricians, orthopaedic surgeons, pathology, radiology, none of them have any Christian position at all. And so I can only speak about my particular department. I think at least we're trying to follow what I see as a Christian pattern of medical practice, but the other departments don't. They do things more or less as everyone else in Hong Kong does. and that's mass medicine, really. So bad things happen. They happen in my department too, of course, but they certainly happen in the other departments, and yet we're Christian. They say, what's the difference? Just like the government, in many ways we are. So Christian institutions are difficult. However, they do give us an opportunity, if only we can get enough Christians to be involved. And these are some of the things that we've been trying to do and would like to develop even more. First is we broadcast prayers night and morning over the intercom system of the hospital. So a little message or some sort of idea is given that this is different, it's Christian. Secondly, every ward has a supply of Bibles, but they're usually hidden away and so patients don't see that, so that's not too effective. And wards also have some Christian literature, which is a little more effective because we have an excellent magazine put out by the IVF in Hong Kong called Breakthrough, which is very well presented. It's very Christian in its content, but it's very well presented, and a lot of patients enjoy reading that. So there's some Christian literature in the wards. Then thirdly, we invite visiting clergymen, evangelists, to come into the hospital once a week on a Saturday afternoon, and we assemble patients in the outpatient area for an evangelistic service. That's a very direct sort of evangelistic effort, because the Chinese Christians, once they're out of the mainline denominations, they're quite zealous and they will preach for quite a long time. But that's Chinese to Chinese. I really can't comment too much about it. I would find it difficult. But they think that's what the Chinese can understand, to hear the gospel. So the gospel is very strongly preached on Saturday afternoons, and those that don't come down here it anyway, because it's broadcast over the hospital. Fourthly, established a pattern on Sunday afternoons of inviting mainly fellowship groups from local churches to come and visit the patients in the hospital. So one group comes once a month on a regular basis. They walk around the hospital wards, and we go into the centre of the ward, we sing a hymn, and then someone explains what the hymn was about, and then we go to each patient and we give them a little gospel tract or something like that. And there's the opportunity to say a word if people are interested. If they're not interested, they make it quite clear, they turn over or pull their sheets over their head or something like that. It's not done too forcibly at all, but the opportunity is certainly given. And if people would like some follow-up, we have a little follow-up form that they can tick that, and then we'll try to get back to that person later on. So that happens on Sunday afternoons. Right. Then probably our most effective work is with Christian staff, of whom Christian nurses are the most important. And some of them are very keen and very good, both sensitive as well as quite specific in their Christian ministry. The great Christian strength of our hospital has been the matron who was our first matron. She's now left and retired. But she is a great Christian worker, Grace Chan. Professionally the most outstanding nurse in Hong Kong, so she had great professional status and prestige, but very clear in her Christian position. And she has managed to have a Christian personnel policy in the nursing establishment. So all senior nurses are quite keen Christians, which is the great strength of the hospital. But I think although we're disappointing at the level of doctors, we're fairly good at the level of nurses. And I think our nurses are probably the best nurses in Hong Kong. I think that the Christian emphasis on compassion and treating people seriously and individually has got through. Although it could be better, by in comparison it's not bad. So they're able, and then we have another group of visitors from the churches to come during the week to visit just the medical wards. This came about after I had a confrontation with our superintendent, and I suggested to him that really our hospital wasn't Christian at all, wasn't really different from the government hospital. That really annoyed him very much, and he said, you know, if you say it's not Christian, what are you doing to make it Christian? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if you want to do these things, you can do them. It's up to you to do them. It's the first time I realised that he'd actually given me that permission to do something specifically Christian. So I immediately contacted some local churches, and in my ward, the medical ward, we allowed the church visitors to come in during the week. And our best visitors of all are a group of retired people in a Lutheran church in Guntong who've been praying for an opportunity of Christian witness. And they've been delighted to come, and they come very faithfully. And they're the best of all because they're older people and they're polite in the way that Chinese are polite, especially the older Chinese. One of the problems in Hong Kong is the younger Chinese are not very polite. But the older Chinese visitors come and they're polite, and most of our patients, of course, are older people. But they're also very clear in their witness too. They get on to talking about the Lord quite quickly, and they're our best evangelists really in the hospital. Because we have a Christian hospital, because we're a Christian hospital, we do have a chaplain, but the appointment of the chaplain has been difficult, and our Christian matron, Miss Chan, blocked the appointment of a chaplain for several years because the first criteria for a chaplain is that he has to be ecumenical. The second is he has to have an MTH. And the third is he has to be a counsellor, really. And he mustn't be an evangelist. Grace Chan was very worried that he'd come along and block all of our Christian work, so she stopped the appointment for a long time. But we've had three chaplains, and they mainly do counselling work and visit those who call themselves Christians, but they're not evangelists. The people we have, probably 10% would call themselves either Catholic or Protestant. 90% would therefore are not Christian, and a lot of those have never heard the Christian gospel at all. About 5% might be Buddhist, 5% might be Taoist, but at least 80% do not have any proper organised religious framework. They believe in spirits, they especially believe in ancestors. It's really an ancestor reverential system that they have, and good luck. They're quite superstitious, but no clear-cut religious framework. So we have great opportunity of really reaching out in a pioneer sort of a missionary outreach situation. But that's the sort of efforts. The other thing is we have Christian groups. We have the Nurses Christian Fellowship and the Hospital Christian Fellowship. And when they're strong, our outreach work is much better than when they're not so strong. At the moment, they're not as strong as we'd like them to be. It depends upon leadership, depends upon enthusiasm. We are a nurses training school, so we have 160 nurses each year, new nurses, 3-year training course. So, and many of the nurses have become Christians as a result of their time in the hospital, and that's been very encouraging. We have a hospital Christian fellowship with about 20 people attending each week for a meeting and a weekly service. So that's the sort of the area of our Christian outreach, but we could do a lot more if we had more people involved and a greater enthusiasm. And it's something that I would like to be much more involved with than I am, but I tend to not get too involved with it because of my medical commitments.
You see many diseases which are
peculiar to Hong Kong,
really?
Yes, it's the two cancers stand out. Hepatoma is the commonest cancer of the gastrointestinal tract in men. So it's commoner than cancer of the stomach or cancer of the colon. And in fact, you can diagnose hepatoma just by the laying on of hands. I hadn't appreciated that you really could. You're not wrong very often. It's just a huge, hard, craggy liver. It can't really be anything else, and it's usually not anything else, so you've made the diagnosis in your first minute.
Yeah,
It's just a matter of confirming it. And you're usually always right. The other one is NPC, nasopharyngeal carcinoma. It's also a common problem in Chinese. It usually presents as just a lymph node in the neck or sometimes recurrent epistaxis. Then we have a lot of tuberculosis, and we have young men and women, healthy, otherwise very healthy, who come in with quite florid and advanced tuberculosis, midi tuberculosis, TB meningitis in young people, adults. That's very interesting. We have a disease that's, I think, quite special for Hong Kong called recurrent pyogenic cholangitis, which is a condition of recurrent episodes of bacterial intrahepatic cholangitis. That presents as acute upper abdominal pain and fever and jaundice, but it keeps recurring. It settles down with antibiotics, but tends to keep on recurring. I think it's related to a previous infestation with Clonorchis sinensis, which is the Chinese liver fluke. But we're not exactly sure how it starts. But once you get it, you keep getting these recurrent attacks. And it's intrahepatic cholestasis rather than cholecystitis, although often there is a cholecystitis associated until the gallbladder then gets removed surgically, but it keeps coming back again. I think they're probably the four major special diseases. Other than that, it's strokes and hypertension and ischemic heart disease. Quite a lot of rheumatic heart disease. We see a lot of nephritis, but I suppose with the population of Perth coming in, we probably just see the normal amount of nephritis, renal disease. The full range of medicine, really, more or less, is here.
The Clonorchis
sinensis and tuberculosis, are they mainly from mainland China? TB, I think, is Hong Kong. I think it's a Hong Kong problem more than probably a mainland problem. Clonorchis sinensis, yes, we probably get it from the fish that comes from mainland. It's freshwater fish, which you eat if you don't cook it properly. And you notice if you have Chinese food, the fish is steamed, and unless you steam it a bit more than it's usually steamed, you're likely to get it. But the snail is only found in China. It's not found in Hong Kong fish.
So in fact,
all of our food, we're kept in Hong Kong by China, so our fish and our pigs and our vegetables and our rice comes from China to a large extent. Yes, that's fish from China. In South China, Cantonese area.
Could you tell us something about community health and what you're doing?
Right. Well, in any third world country, you realise very quickly that curative medicine is just patching things up. And so we're all being interested in the idea of trying to prevent disease and detect disease early. This is all community health. We have the task of trying to relate community health principles to an urban setting. Most of the work that's being done on community health is being done in a rural setting. We've had to work out how to apply it to a congested urban area. When the hospital was built, it said that we're going to have a structure which has these three independent sections. One is the School of Nursing, one is the hospital, and the other is what we call the community health program. And they're going to be related under the same hospital board, but independent. Now, the tasks that we're doing in our community health program then are these. Firstly, we've established community health centres to provide low-cost clinics in the housing estate, and to be basis for other activities. So we have a network of five clinics. Secondly, we would have a community education, health education unit. We'd take on areas of health to educate the community in, mainly through rotating display boards and exhibitions, and we produce a health magazine once a month, which we hand out to everyone. The health education unit, and we go around the schools involved in health education lectures. Thirdly, we have a school medical service where we send some China-trained doctors, actually, who will never get registered in Hong Kong because they're not good enough, but they go around and do some school health examinations for early detection of disease. Then we started a community nursing service, which is like the district nurses of Australia. And that really has probably been our most magical achievement. Our hospital was probably the most important force in developing community nursing service. Although it didn't actually start, it started at the end of the 1960s in one clinic, started the Methodist clinic. But since the 1974, we've trained nurses and then sent them out to visit our patients as we sent them home. So the major areas were obstetrics. We have 3,500 babies a year in our hospital in 40 beds. So we only take primates, grandma tips, and complicated obstetric histories. But if you're a primate, if you're uncomplicated, you're home in less than 24 hours. And if you're seized, you've still got to be home in about 3 or 4 days. So we send our nurses home to look after obstetric patients. We send them home to look after our medical patients, especially our stroke patients for rehabilitation. Our surgical patients with ulcers or to have sutures removed. Because we have a hospital, we can send people home, so we were able to give jobs to our nurses and establish them in that work. The money came from World Council of Churches to establish this, but 3 years ago the government finally realised it was a worthwhile service, and so the government has now taken over the whole funding of community nursing service. They've set up their own training school, and so the government now trains its own community nurses and pays the whole bill. So we're really very pleased with that. That was a major achievement of the community health project, this community nursing service. And certainly the way we did it, of course, is we tried to show the government that we're saving beds, which is true. We're a 600 bed hospital, but any one day we have 300 patients being visited by nurses and being maintained at home that otherwise wouldn't be in hospital. Community nursing service. Then we have an area called the health maintenance program, and that's got 4 subsections. Health maintenance program, so the idea of maintaining health. One is the area of maternal and child health, and we run an infant health maintenance program whereby for payment of HK$75, we will provide a service for you for the first year of life of your child. We'll give you free medical service, we'll give you regular checkups, health education material, vaccinations, and generally we'll care for you, especially if you register in that program. The government provides maternal and child health services, just we do it better in terms of a better contact with patients, more educational involvement.
And government one is free.
Government's free, yes. No, it's not really. Not for a year of free medical care, you can go along to the doctor any time of the year and get medical. It's really quite important. So we have infant health. We have a geriatric health service where we provide social and health and medical facilities for old people. We have an industrial health service. I told you that we're in a major industrial area where we provide a medical service for workers, screening checkup and health checkups for workers. And we have an adult screening service where we'll do a cheap general checkup for people who are worried about their health. So that's the health maintenance program. And then we have the fifth arm, which is community development. And community development is mainly a sociological concept of how to help the community develop themselves. And it has certain principles such as the community must take responsibility for their own health, and we are there to facilitate them, to try to get the community to take action on their own interests and their own behalf. We will be a resource centre, but they've got to actually do the work and do their own, modify their own ways of doing things to improve their health. It's a rather nebulous field. It's not very specific. We employ 4 people at any one time to do community development. And they go out and try to meet community leaders, to try to encourage them in perhaps holding health promotion material, exhibitions. Basically it's using a lot of trying to get health education material across to the community and to get them to be more involved in improving their health. Our community health project now has a budget of more than $1 million. Most of the money for it is coming from the German church government funding. The World Council of Churches gave a lot initially. We're trying to be self-supporting, but in many ways I don't think we will be, because most of those programs don't make money. So that's, as far as we know, we're the only organisation that's trying to produce a community health model in an urban setting. So a little bit has been written about it. Dr. Patterson wrote in this is one he wrote for Tropical Doctor, but the BMA conference from Britain was held in Hong Kong last year. He presented a paper on that, which was published in the BMJ last year, which is outlining some of the community health models that we have and what we're trying to do. I think, but I'm not sure, it was about March last year, 1980. Well, I think if we start, we say thank you very much for coming on. That was very kind of you to come. I'm very pleased to tell you a little bit about the work that I'm involved in Hong Kong and let you know a bit about things there. And I would appreciate your comments and suggestions and advice as to how we could do things better. Now, they asked for this to be taped. I really can't imagine that anyone would want a copy of it, but we'll keep it running for a little while. And just to introduce myself to the tape, I'm Russell Clark. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm with the Church Missionary Society and been placed in Hong Kong since 1974. It was my hope. I thought God was leading me actually to work in Indonesia, but God overruled in wonderful ways, and I found myself in Hong Kong in a hospital that's called the United Christian Hospital. And this is a hospital that has come from an ecumenical grouping of the major Christian denominations in Hong Kong. It's called the Hong Kong Christian Council. And in the 1960s, they felt that there was an opportunity and a need, really, for the churches to be involved in a major medical task, not just small clinic work. And so this Protestant body chose a subcommittee to look into this area. And in cooperation with the government, plans were laid for the building of a major hospital. The area chosen is called Guntong, spelt K-W-U-N-T-O-N-G, but pronounced really as if it's G-U-N, Guntong, which is on the eastern side of Kowloon. Now, I realise most of you have been to Hong Kong, so it's when you come into the airport, you turn right. Instead of turning left, most people turn left, which takes you into the bright lights of Nathan Road, Jim So Joy, and then across to Hong Kong Island. Well, you don't go that way, you turn right, and you go to Guntong. And 25 years ago, there was nothing there, but the area was allocated to be an industrial area and a housing area, government housing area. And Guntong is now in the Guinness Book of Records as the most industrialised and congested factory area in the world, and we have something like 3,000 factories all in a square mile on the harbour front. The factories produce textiles and plastic implements, flowers and parts for electronics, equipment and so on. So the workers that were there, the capitalists building the factories, and the people then rehoused in major government housing estates, and we have some six very large housing estates, with a population of 700,000 people, all in 4 square miles. So the city of Perth has just suddenly been placed on this eastern end of Kowloon and housed in very high-rise buildings. Well, that all started some 20 years ago, but the government had no plans at all of building a hospital for that area, and so the people had to do the best they could to get into the major government hospital, which is in the central part of Kowloon. We're about 7 miles from this hospital. But with only one road in and out of Guntong, with that number of people, the traffic's very congested, it's very difficult to get in and out. Hong Kong also has many records. Another one is that we have one vehicle, one registered vehicle for every 18 feet of road. So we have major traffic congestion, and it's very difficult often to get in or out, and you feel quite isolated in this sort of area. Well, the churches saw there was a real contribution they could make to providing a hospital for the Guntong area, and they planned for it and they raised funds for it. Most of the money came from overseas Christians, World Council of Churches, German funding, and they needed about 40 million Hong Kong dollars to build it, and the churches went close to getting something like 30 million with a modest contribution from Hong Kong itself. The rest of the money came from the government because the churches said to the government, well, we can build a 300-bed hospital, that's it. The government said, no, go ahead with your plans for a larger hospital and we'll put the rest in. And so that's how it's come about. The government gave the land and put in the extra money to build it. And from the beginning, we had an arrangement with the government that they would pay 90% of all the running costs. And we worked out an authority structure whereby the major, most important committee is called the medical committee, which has half from the hospital and half from the government, and this is where decisions are made about budgeting and expansion plans and so on. So that's the hospital was then opened in December 1973. It looks something like that. I've got lots of slides, but obviously I haven't brought them today to show you. If I can find some pictures for you. Built as a 570-bed hospital. It's now 640 beds, as we've had to just cram things in a little bit more. Of course, of the demand that's laid upon it. So we're Christian in enterprise and in initiative. That it's grown from the churches. The government are quite happy to allow the hospital to be independent in the way it does things. I'd like to hand that around. And the authority structure is the hospital board, of which 50% are nominated by the Hong Kong Christian Council. So in fact at that level the structure is such that the churches, we hope that means Christians, the churches are able to influence the style of the hospital quite considerably. That's all built into the system, and the government will not interfere with any particular Christian style of work that we might like to do.